WWE, the custody of a child will be determined in a match. Oh, I knew he was going to do that.
Hulk Hogan is a jabroni, heart of a bride. But my boss, the Steph McMahon, is not jabroni.
Let's get a horse of time, fool.
Put that cigarette out.
Will you stop?
What's up, Drunk Marks? Welcome to this week's episode of Drunk Wrestling History. I'm your designated host, Adam, and with us, as always, are two American badasses themselves, who happen to be drunk historians, meaning that they know their history of wrestling, they drink, they are American, and they are pretty badass. Who the hell are you?
This is Eddie, Woozle Wuzzle.
And this is Scott. It's ghetto blaster time, fool.
And what do we have to drink? This is now, as of this recording, this is 11:30 at night. We've been going at it for 5-6 hours now. What are we still drinking?
So I am on a, I'm drinking a White Claw natural lime. I just had a shot of Jaeger, a half shot of Jaeger about an hour ago. And you know what? It's getting late, like Adam said, and I almost made a cup of coffee between episodes, but I didn't want to make you guys wait.
Yeah, don't sober up. What the hell's wrong with you?
No, I was just trying to sober up. I was trying to keep going strong, dude.
I've got a tropical lime Corona seltzer that I'm still working on, so cheers, everybody.
All right. Salud.
So, as of this taping... This is the fourth episode that we've recorded on this particular session.
Yes.
And I've had a different root beer for each session, for each one. I mean, we'll see how this recording goes. This might be the shortest in time, but apparently I saved the biggest bottle for last. I got Sparky's root beer out of Pacific Grove.
Ooh, that sounds good.
Yeah.
Very fancy.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, don't get too fucked up, though. Be careful.
Hey, it's a big bottle. Me and my sugar highs and knowing what I did with the last Rat Bastard beer, who knows what the hell will happen tonight.
That was a big bottle, too.
It's a huge bottle.
Yeah.
Hopefully you take that one orally.
Orally.
Yeah, I saw Madonna with a bottle like that one time.
Oh, Jesus Christ.
Justify her love.
All right. First off, before we jump into things and justify love.
Justify my love.
Garth.
Waiting.
We're in Madonna's room. Whoa!
Do you remember that guy? Was it Gary Cherone who peed in Madonna?
Peed in her?
Yeah, wasn't the singer from Extreme?
Oh.
Was it the guy from Enough's Enough?
Are you sure it wasn't Canseco?
No, it wasn't Canseco. He doesn't do that. No, I think it was the singer from Enough's Enough. You're one of those fucking glam metal guys.
Yeah, I've never heard this story. I didn't know somebody peed in her.
It was one of those. It was either him or Gary Cherone. One of them peed in Madonna. And he's a
not
fucking,
R. Kelly.
He's a fucking no. No, it wasn't R. Kelly.
He probably would though.
How are you gonna make a video about peeing on people?
I plead the fifth.
All right, let's move on.
First off, head over to whatamaneuver.net. Get those Drunk Wrestling History t-shirts. Hella comfortable.
Buy it. Wear it to wrestling shows. Wear it to the fucking pub. Wear it to Black Angus if you go there. Ew.
That's a free plug for Black Angus, dude.
Oh, don't do that.
But definitely go to the pub and spill beer on it.
The public house.
It soaks it right up.
Yes. Very, very soft material. I mean, we are classy guys with a classy podcast for you. And when it comes to the tangibles that you could purchase for this show, this is definitely one of them.
It won't chafe your nipples.
It is the only one of them, but it's really good quality. Can't say any more good things about it because it's fantastic. All right. For this week's episode, This is going to span over some time. We're going to go over some good matches and some highlights. This being 2020, it marks 20 years since a fantastic gimmick. This is all about the American Badass Undertaker. This is a character that debuted at Judgment Day in 2000, at the conclusion of the Rock versus Triple H Iron Man match. And the gimmick evolved for its period of four years,
I believe. Yeah, it was. 4 years. Yeah. It would have been just under 4 years, because it would have been May. So I just googled it. It was May 2000 when he debuted. So because when you said 20 years, I was like, wow, it is right about exactly 20 years. So it's 20 years. 20 years and 2 months. If Scott hadn't gotten food poisoning, it would have been 20 years and 1 month.
Right.
Yeah.
Thanks, Taco Bell.
Right. Do you remember, Adam, because I actually didn't put this in my notes. Do you remember how Deadman Undertaker went away?
I do not.
Was it like a Buried Alive match?
Oh, Deadman Undertaker. No, that I don't recall. I know.
Okay. I thought he got injured. Wasn't it the Ministry of Darkness or something that he was running, and then he got hurt, and then he just went away for a while to reheal or to heal up, and then came back as American Badass.
But was he? Yeah, but how was he written off TV?
Hmm.
Okay, so we've done good research on this episode.
It's a very drunk thing to do.
Yeah.
We're not talking about that, though. We're talking about his reinvention of himself.
You're right. That's true. So at some point he went away, and yes, he came back. He interrupted that Triple H and Rock Iron Man match at Judgment Day 2000, which was a fucking crazy ass match. Did you watch it?
Yes.
That match was this is Shawn, one of the matches.
Shawn Michaels is the guest referee
in those terrible tiny shorts.
Oh yeah. McMahon Helmsley faction is just loaded, but but, I mean, only Sean could pull that look off. Or not, whatever. But I would say it was what it is. Okay.
You say terrible, I say hot. Whatever.
No, I mean, even the way he was hung, he didn't look good in those shorts. Yeah, you know what I mean? You'd have to be Jungle Boy to look good in those shorts.
Can I just say this is my favorite version of The Undertaker? The American Badass?
And suddenly you're a minority. White man.
Yeah, no, totally. And I think it's because the Undertaker that started in the 90s.
Yes.
He was, I always kind of viewed him as one of those gimmicks that was thrown against the wall, and he's the one that stuck. As we talked about a few episodes ago, he was the Vince version that didn't fail. That was a huge Vince success. He gambled on him. Yeah. He won. That was a gimmick that stuck, that lasted 30 years.
Okay, that's fair.
So he was more of one of those gimmick characters that just so happened to work out. And that never went away for me, even when he was Ministry Undertaker, and any version before 2000 to me was still a gimmick. But the American Badass was very true to who Mark was. And maybe that's why it struck me more as, okay, this is a character I can get behind.
Right.
It's more true to him as a person. And, I mean, look, Ultimate Warrior, Hulk Hogan, those guys were like superheroes, right? And Undertaker could have fallen under that umbrella as well. But I bought more into those other guys, and I didn't really buy into the Undertaker character. But the American Badass, now that dude drove a motorcycle, he kicked ass in the ring, that's somebody I could get behind. And that's why he's my favorite version of The Undertaker.
So you felt that a biker was more realistic of a character than a zombie?
Yes.
I respect that.
That's exactly right.
Okay.
On some kind of level, I guess, like not being a zombie or dead man per se, it's more relatable to humans, which is the key demographic of wrestling. So I guess maybe there was that appreciation.
Right. 18 to 49 year old humans.
Exactly. And that's not to say that the Undertaker from the 90s wouldn't have worked.
Right.
In the early 2000s. But I think this worked better.
I mean, I...
That's just my opinion.
I don't disagree. You know, like, I loved the Dead Man Undertaker, but I really did like the American Badass Undertaker a lot. It was really... it was cool. Especially for the time. You know, the timing of it worked perfectly because... Like, at that point, there weren't a lot of gimmicky guys. Like, the most gimmicky thing at that point was, like, Val Venus, which was just a guy who was a porn star.
Right.
You know?
Pretty much, yeah.
So, it made sense. It made sense at the time.
Yeah. Well, there was Godfather, too, right, who was a pimp. But those guys were kind of few and far between.
Well, but even
so
Godfather was fairly realistic. Like, dude, you drive down San Pablo Avenue in Oakland certain times of the day, you'll... I'm not even kidding. Like, I'm not making a joke. You see guys that look like that.
Well, right. And plus, he did run a strip club. Like, that was believable for him.
Right. He had an actual hoe train.
Exactly. And I think that's why I got behind the American Badass Undertaker, because maybe that was a little more true to who he was kind of behind the scenes. Like, he was a biker. He was tatted up. He could kick your ass. Like, it was more realistic to me. And then in 2004, he went back to the Dead Man gimmick, and I kind of fell out of favor with Undertaker again. But the American Badass slash Big Evil character, to me, will always be my favorite version of him.
I get that. Yeah, that makes sense. So what we wanted to do tonight was go over, like, a couple highlights of that run. So, like, a couple matches, a couple, you know, big moments. So what do you have, Adam?
I mean, really, just to start it off, the reason why I wanted to go over American Badass, this was my first version of The Undertaker.
Right.
So, and I'm guessing for some of you that started watching wrestling right at 2000, you might be on a similar boat. And then with just internet and information, what you could look up and what you would have to dig more thoroughly into, you would have to learn about the Dead Man character later on. I think after Backlash, they started promos of this mysterious character leading up to Judgment Day, but there was no way to tell that they were that he was going to come out to Kid Rock music.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then Limp Bizkit. Yay.
Yeah. Yeah, well,
Ed loved that, by the way.
Yeah,
No, I didn't love that, but I liked the Limp Bizkit song better than the Kid Rock song, because first of all, the Kid Rock song is a Metallica song,
right? Yes, it is,
but a shitty version of it. second of all, like I liked that. I thought it being more upbeat, the Roland, I thought it was more upbeat. Fit an Undertaker more because he's riding a motorcycle.
Mm-hmm. Right. Know? That fit.
Yeah, and he was actually, when he got in the ring, he was fairly, at that point, he was working pretty, like, at a quick pace, you know?
Yeah.
So I thought
his style in the ring changed a little bit.
A lot. I thought Roland fit him way better as a character. Now, look, I think a lot of other songs could have fit him better than that. Like,
Table Dance?
Yeah, that would have been a good one. Or I was going to say, like, a ZZ Top song or something, you know, like something, or Pantera song, right?
Right.
Like, you know, like something from Texas, like a Texas, like Cowboys from Hell would have been great. Like,
sure.
He could have come out and called himself the Cowboy from Hell instead of the American Badass, because he got American Badass from the shitty Kid Rock song. He could have called himself the Cowboy from Hell and come out to Cowboys from Hell. And I thought that would have been
in context. That would make sense without...
It would have made just as much sense. It wouldn't have changed the character at all, but it would have been cooler.
Yeah, I hear you.
If you're a Pantera fan, you know.
Which I am. I've got a Pantera tattoo. I'm all about that.
So do I, you know.
Yes, you do.
I mean, I guess Kid Rock was a bigger deal than Pantera were, but...
Well, arguably.
You know. Yeah. That's how I feel about that.
Yeah. All right, so... Experience-wise, it was a month of build-up. Why Judgment or Mysterious Judgment Day promos, and then a big reveal in this context. So, the next few months, he would have WWE Championship matches with, or Rock would be champion at the time. Kurt Angle's in contention. Chris Benoit's in contention. Kane's in contention. So that was the majority of his feuds, up through that Hell in a Cell at Armageddon. That's in general who he was fighting. I guess maybe just regaining footing as this character. And then I'd say it really took an interesting turn at Invasion. So for now, about a year or so, we've seen him.
He kind of turned babyface at Invasion, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, we've now seen him more mobile, more vocal, and even more humorous. Or just humorous in general now as the American Badass character. As opposed to the Dead Man. I think one of my favorite funniest moments, it was a SmackDown after the Mania with TLC, I believe. TLC 2.
That would have been 17.
Yeah. So, if that's the case, I think Hardy Boys and Lita beat the Big Show because they all pinned him. Big Show was looking for the three of them. And then he knocked on Undertaker and Kane's door. Undertaker and Kane beat the shit out of him. And then as Big Show's laying there and they walk back into the room, Taker just goes, "Next time, knock."
How the fuck do you remember that?
It's crazy. I don't know. It was just standout.
That's crazy, man.
Yeah. Or, I mean, comedy performer, I guess that comedy element just stuck out. So
I guess so, yeah.
Yeah. So, in general, we've seen those three elements established now. Now we dive into another level of this. Shane McMahon just purchased WCW, so it starts the whole DDP stalking Sarah angle.
That was good. And,
yeah. Like, that was a really good... It wasn't the only element that led to the... to the whole Invasion, but it was definitely a key figure of it, aside from Shane revealing that he's the one that bought it instead of Vince, and then finding out that DDP is the one that was stalking. This is like the foundation for war, and American Badass Undertaker is a key part of that.
Right.
That would also include title matches with Kane and Sarah accompanying them, beat DDP and Canyon for the WC. No, I forget who.
Yeah, that's right.
WCW tag titles and the WWF tag titles. I forget who the two guys were that were the champions entering Invasion, but they got it from them. But yeah, just adding more fuel to that fire of this is like I'm fighting this war against DDP while also fighting this war against the Alliance.
Right.
Yeah.
Let's not go too deep into the Invasion because we're gonna do an episode on that later.
Yeah.
I'm not trying to cut you off, but just like
No. Keep it on Taker.
Makes sense. Exactly. Yeah. Yeah, but that was all good shit. I loved one of my favorite parts of American Badass and the Invasion was when Undertaker gave the locker room that motivational speech. Remember that? Was that Survivor Series? That might have been a Survivor Series, right? When it was like
that was Survivor Series.
It must have
been
a lead up towards that because he was part of that team as well.
And it was so cool because it was one of those things where you're like, you know, it's not real, but you feel like it is because if someone is going to give a motivational speech, it isn't going to be the Undertaker, you know?
You know his status, yeah.
Right, you know he's the man, you know he's like the leader of the locker room because this would have been, this 2001, he would have been there 11 years. Fuck, dude, besides him, the longest one on the roster at that point would have been Triple H, right?
Probably.
Which would have been like 95-ish?
Mm-hmm.
So like Taker was by far the veteran of the company.
Yeah.
So
because Shawn Michaels was like in and out.
He was gone, you know.
Yeah.
He'd been gone. Well, at that point, he'd been actually officially retired for 3 years. But, you know, he was still part of the company. But, yeah, he wasn't there.
Not consistently.
All the old school guys were gone. Brett obviously was gone.
Yeah.
Any of those guys. So, yeah, I think those would have been the two. Man, you think about that. We got to do an episode about Taker and Triple H, like their whole.
That would be great.
You know, like.
Oh, yeah.
Because we've talked about, you know, we did the Eddie and Ray one. And Scott, you and I have talked about doing a couple things like that. We talked about doing Triple H and Rock. We got to do a Triple H and Undertaker one. You know, because they.
I mean, yeah, for sure.
What a fucking history those two guys have had.
Yeah.
But yeah, that was great. I loved American Badass during the invasion. It was awesome.
Yeah, you saw more mobility, and then you saw him more grounded as a person, like like wrestle with intent to be victorious instead of wrestle for a paycheck. And yeah, I guess that motivational speech before the Survivor Series that really hit home.
It was awesome. Yeah.
Yeah.
So, do you have any specific matches that you wanted to go over?
I think not long after that, one particular one, it's like he had then turned heel literally right after Survivor Series. I want to point out his WrestleMania match against Ric Flair. No disqualification.
Awesome.
So backstory for that, at No Way Out, Ric Flair interfered with Undertaker's match against, it was The Rock, right?
I think so.
Okay. And so...
So then Taker wanted a match at WrestleMania, but Flair didn't want it.
Right.
Right.
At this point, he's also now 9-0 at Mania. To whether that was a factor that scared Flair... who knows? But he demanded that match.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and Flair's like, no. So Undertaker goes and finds his fucking kid.
Oh, right? Yes.
He was like, I'm going to murder your son if you don't give me a match. He beats the fuck. That was David Flair, right?
Yes. Yeah, beat the shit out of David.
He beat the fuck out of that kid. I mean, he whipped his ass. And finally, Nature Boy gave in. He's like, okay. Like, I would prefer you don't murder my fucking son.
But oh man, you could just see like Big Evil like one of the gimmicks of that American Badass Undertaker, not just Dead Man Inc., but
yeah,
of Big Evil. Yeah, I'm overly cocky. I'm just gonna politely sit here, put my arm around this guy that I just beat the shit out of,
and
see, I could do this all day. And I'm not going to stop until you give me what I want. So let's just keep this shit going. What a cocky son of a bitch. But man, it was engaging.
He was a motherfucker.
Oh, yeah.
So we get to 18, and that was actually my second favorite match. I was there, right? That was my first, like, real traveling WrestleMania. That was my second favorite match of the night. Undertaker was fucking killing Ric Flair. I mean, he literally
almost killed him.
That was the one where Chow screamed, "You're killing him." And the whole, like, it was just, he was beating him so badly that it got uncomfortable and the whole place was silent. And Chow yells, "You're killing him." And the whole section popped. Like, it was great.
You're witnessing a murder.
Yeah, I mean, that was awesome. I've watched that. I probably watched that a year ago. That's the second best match of the night. Like, that's great WrestleMania. That match was insane. Like, he just fucking, you're like, okay, this is where I'm going to... It was like watching a snuff film, you know? You're like, okay, Ric Flair's going to die tonight. Like, I thought I was... I'm there in the Sky Dome. I'm like, well, I'm going to see a murder in Toronto tonight. Like, I hope I don't get called in as a witness because I got to fly home tomorrow.
And you didn't ever see Flair get handled like the way he got handled that night.
No, not like that. Undertaker beat the fuck out of him.
Yeah, he did.
Throughout the match as well, like, I want to say he did it two times, like, went for a pin after the two count, picked him up. God, I love that.
Yeah, and there was one part where I forget what was going on, but Undertaker was fucking him up and he yelled. He kind of yelled to him and the camera picked it up. He said, "Now we go to school," and JR picked up on that, and JR was like, he was like, "Oh yeah, Undertaker says now we go to school." I'm like, dude,
yeah,
legit. That was how many years ago was that? It was 18 years ago. I use that phrase probably a couple times a month, especially at work, you know? Like, I love that. It was so cool when he said, "Now we go to school."
Oh, I thought that was how you kidnap little kids. No?
I didn't say that was not why I use that phrase.
So, oh, okay. Okay.
I would prefer you don't make assumptions, Scott.
Sorry, I didn't mean to give up your secrets. My bad.
Yeah. Damn it. Kayfabe, brother. Kayfabe, brother.
Free candy is so back in the 80s.
Yeah. They call me Mr. Tinker Train. So one of my favorite matches, and I think it's got to be his most famous matches in the American Badass, was his ladder match with Jeff Hardy on Raw, right?
Yes.
Killer. Wasn't that insane? So it was, oh, that was, yes. That was July 2002, so it was a couple months after his match with Flair. He's a heel. He was a motherfucker. Like, he was just like, I'm going to beat Jeff Hardy, like, in a very bad way. I'm going to make him hurt. Like, I could get up this ladder quickly, but I'd rather not, because I would like to punish this motherfucker.
Same yeah. thing, just like picking up after a two count. No, let's continue some pain.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, yeah. Right. Yeah, at one point, like, Jeff was completely fucked, and Undertaker was like, oh, I can climb the ladder, but I won't.
Uh-oh. Uh-oh. We lose him?
Uh-oh. Yeah, I think his AirPods just went out.
Oh, shit.
Awesome. Oh, no. He completely... Oh, wait, oh, here he comes.
Here he comes, here he comes. Okay. There Dead he Man
I
Rises.
Got to, I got All to... Hey, right. I got to connect it for a second. All right. You know, it was the AirPods. I double tapped the AirPods and I hit Siri.
See now?
I'm so embarrassed.
You must be.
Siri, that Nava bitch.
Yeah. There was another part where he like hung Jeff over the apron and kicked him in the face. I'm watching him like, Jeff Hardy should be in the hospital and the Undertaker should be in fucking prison. But Jeff at one point got a chair and started whipping Undertaker's ass, and Undertaker sold the shit out of those chairs.
He did.
Oh, yeah.
You know, like, he made Jeff look good, and it was kind of the only offense Jeff got in the whole match. But, I mean, he looked good when he was doing it.
I think he just got a few aerial moves here and there. I don't think he even hit the Swanton on it, but, yeah, it was more of, like, I think it was maybe more of building Jeff up than featuring Undertaker, but... But still, in that context, in what turned out to be Undertaker's first ladder match of any sort, he adapted, but also made Jeff look amazing in this.
He did.
While continuing to be an asshole.
Right.
Yeah, totally. Yeah. After the match, like, so he won the match. He's leaving, and he was so I don't know if he was selling or if he was actually like concussed. He almost fell off his fucking bike.
Oh, shit.
He got on the motorcycle. Yeah, he got on the motorcycle and almost dropped the fucking thing.
He was wobbly after right? that one.
Yeah, and I was like, man.
It was a little creepy how he got off the ladder. So even trying to make it over to his bike is like, something's wrong.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So I don't know that one of those chair shots didn't actually legit fuck him up, you know?
Yeah.
Like, he might have had an actual concussion. Which was, you know, wrestling back in the day.
Yeah, unprotected chair shots. It happened.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, and then another one was that, you know, the Hell in the Cell he did with Rock, Triple H, Rikishi, Kurt Angle, and Stone Cold.
Oh, he made someone famous.
He made Rikishi famous.
Yep. Very famous.
Oh, yeah. Like, that was...
In the only Mankind way possible.
Dude, I'll tell you what, man. I'll tell you what, if that spot where he tossed Rikishi off the cage or off the cell, if that hadn't happened, I'm not sure Rikishi would be in the Hall of Fame.
Really? That one moment?
Yeah, I mean, that was the biggest thing Rikishi ever did, right?
I don't know about that, dude.
I mean, when you think of a Rikishi thing, like a specific moment, not him dancing with the fucking sunglasses that were too small.
Oh, but, well, that's what I remember. Royal Rumble 2000.
But like a specific Rikishi match or spot. Like, what do you think of? You think about him falling on the back of that stupid truck?
No, I think Stinkface, and I think Royal Rumble 2000, where him and Too Cool were the three people in the ring. That's what I got Rikishi for, and also birthing the Usos.
He didn't birth. Well, he didn't birth them.
Not him personally, but you know, he provided the milk for that. So.
Right, they came out the nut sack. Doomed to be a killer since I came out the nut sack. Shit. That was a crazy match, though. Like, Undertaker was raising hell in there. He strangled someone with a fucking microphone cable. he got on top of the cell. Like, that was cool too, because the timekeeper, who was very good at throwing beers, apparently was good at throwing chairs, because he threw a chair onto the top of the cell.
Skills.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, Rikishi was hitting the Undertaker in the chest with the chair, which, like, you don't really see.
Oh,
like,
dude.
He's like a baseball bat at Taker's chest.
That has to
well,
suck.
This is this is Rikishi's only, and again, diverting away from Taker a little bit, this is Rikishi's only real run at a heavyweight title in WWE.
Right, yes,
so,
exactly.
But still, I guess, just in that context, Undertaker supported him in that match, so... That is a good point of saying, like, should Rikishi be in the Hall of Fame? I'd say the way that he was present in this match and the way Undertaker put a or made him famous in this match, it showed Rikishi's full range as being an individual wrestler, as a tag team wrestler, and as a potential heavyweight wrestler.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Or heavyweight champion, heavyweight wrestler, but a heavyweight champion potential there.
Right, right. Yeah, that's kind of... I feel like that's one of the more famous Hell in the Cell matches of all time, right?
Yeah, for sure.
You know, you've got, like you probably got, like, Shawn and Taker. You've got Foley and Taker.
Yes.
And then you've got Triple H and Taker, which, like... Thank you. Carissa just brought me another White Claw.
That's the last one.
That's the last one. Damn it.
She's like, here you go, white girl.
Shit, dude. I ran out of booze, dude. Like, in an hour, I'm going to be drinking the cooking wine.
Chasing it with a cooking sherry.
You ever done that, dude? You ever been like up at like 4 like no like 7 a.m like the sun's coming up and you're fucking finishing off the cooking wine?
No, never, because I don't stay up until 7 a.m dude. I don't drink like you.
Coward.
Yeah, totally. Totally.
I drink like no one's watching.
And then you drink like everyone's watching.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I record it for a podcast. Yeah, so like the most famous cell matches would be like Taker would be in like in several of them.
Yeah,
and this is definitely one of them. Like this is one of like I mean you see that highlight of Rikishi getting thrown off the cell like still to this day.
Yeah, Taker and Lesnar's really good too in the cell. So yeah, Taker's been a huge part of the Hell in the Cell history.
Mm-hmm. Totally. Yeah. So I have one other match and one other incident on my list. So his last match, do you have anything before I get to his last match, Adam?
Well, I guess, yeah, a few of them, but I'll try to make them quick-ish, maybe.
Cool,
we'll
Scott's
see.
Tired.
I'm very old.
He's very old.
Don't worry, it's just 3 more hours. So, when trying to think of, like, what's the collection of American Badass matches to think of for this one, I really couldn't think of any others or that really contrasted that ladder match with Jeff Hardy, because that match sensed a turn or like hinted a face turn back. It was more about I'm the Undertaker. I've been here now for 10 years. Also, which by the way, when he beat Ric Flair, that his cocky way of showing... 1, 2, 3, 4. Yeah, I just won fucking 10 WrestleManias.
Yeah, he did that. That was the first time I became aware of the streak too.
Mm-hmm. So at that point, it's become he's like well established. He can run the show and he could help support a show, and so showing Jeff Hardy the respect and like after beating the holy hell out of him in a ladder match. Raises Jeff Hardy's hand. Okay, there's a face turn
coming. And he raised Jeff Hardy's stock.
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
Exactly.
But
that's what a leader does.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
He ended up getting into a feud with the Un-Americans, and that like completely solidified his face turn back. Because, I mean, it's still less than a year since 9/11 took place. But to have the American Badass character show the strength of the country through him, I guess. Maybe
my favorite kind of tree.
Yeah. Maybe that kind of pressure, but he still succeeded in being victorious over Test in that one pay-per-view, and then just showing U.S. strength in that.
Right.
It was just really fun to watch that particular turn. Because also as WWE or as Undisputed Champion, we saw the debut of John Cena, almost beats Kurt Angle, and then he scares Rikishi, Kidman, and Ron Simmons off to congratulate John Cena. So it's clear that it's not just being an American badass. He's about be a wrestler and work for respect.
Did you go back and watch this, or do you just remember it?
I remember John Cena's first episode.
God damn, dude.
Yeah. Wow. I love John Cena. Might as well. I guess one particular match that I want to point out, which is weird, definitely not his best match as American Badass, but I think it's at least an important one to point out. He was supposed to team up with Nathan Jones at 19 yes. against yes. Big Show and A-Train.
Yeah. We were there.
Yeah. Nathan Jones gets taken out during Heat, and it turns into a handicap match. So I guess even though it was weird circumstances in the way that this particular one came out, which, by the way, Limp Bizkit intros him.
Yep.
Like Grunge Central in Seattle. I could be wrong about this, but maybe Undertaker's first entrance with fireworks instead of fire, maybe?
Hmm.
Probably. Yeah. I don't know. I'd have to watch 17 and 18, but yeah, right. That's a good possibility.
Yeah. And coming out with a big flag on the back of his bike.
Yep.
Yeah. I think just
it was a badass entrance.
It was amazing.
Yeah.
Like that whole intro. I mean, Motorhead did it for Triple H. I want to say 2 years prior.
Yeah.
But
17.
Man, they delivered on 19.
Yeah, they got the chicks dancing on the. This would have been only the second time that had ever happened, right? Where a band plays someone to the ring.
It's possible.
Yeah.
It's possible.
Yeah. No, because it happened at 17 and it happened at 8 because Saliva played somebody to the ring at 18, didn't they?
Oh, or Saliva played.
Or were they just there?
Was it the Dudleys?
The Dudleys, yeah.
Yeah.
It's possible.
Get the tables!
You do that so yeah. well. Can I also say at WrestleMania 19, I think that's the best the Undertaker has ever looked physically.
Oh, yeah, dude. He was fucking ripped.
Yeah, he was really cut up at 19, dude. He looked fantastic.
Yeah, totally. Yeah. Now, Adam, do you know the backstory about that match? Why Adam Jones was... Adam Jones is the drummer from Tool, who was also a huge wrestling fan. Nathan Jones, you know why he was got jumped backstage?
Okay, no, I don't.
Because apparently he sucked. Mm-hmm. I guess because Undertaker had a ring at his house in Houston or Austin, wherever he lived at the time. And he went down there and worked with Nathan Jones, and I guess he just couldn't get it together. Like, he just couldn't figure it out. He just, like, could not fucking wrestle because that – was that his only match? Or not his only match, but his last match? Like, he was gone right after that.
Well, he was a face, right? And then when then he left for a while. They sent him back down to developmental. He did come back as a heel, but he was only there for a minute, dude, and then he was gone.
Right. He never had any real run. He was like Brockus.
Pretty much, yeah.
So apparently, like, the dude just could not do a match. So they actually, after advertising him in that, they took him out of the match. So the way they took him out of it was have him get jumped at Heat. And then they were like, okay, we'll bring him back in for the finish. He did that, like, spin kick to Albert, I guess. And that was it. But, yeah.
It was one of them, but yeah.
Yeah. And then he was in that movie Troy.
Undertaker was?
No,
Nathan Jones. Oh, yeah. Fuck him.
He starred opposite Brad Pitt.
Well, fuck him. This is not his episode.
Oh, yeah. that'd be a good episode, though, right?
Fuck no. Nathan Jones? God, no.
Yeah, dude, you think I can't fucking talk shit about that guy for 15 minutes for a 205 jive?
All right, well, hey, look, we're going to have talking shit episodes.
Hey, dude, you put You put some tequila in me, dude. It's gonna be a fucking good time.
It's already a good time.
We could do an episode on wrestlers that lasted for 5 minutes. Like,
yeah, we got Nick.
Like him. There's Kazarni as well.
Ludwig Borga.
Baracus.
Yeah, plenty of people. Yeah. Baracus. But then it, yeah.
But that's another episode.
Yeah.
Mantar. Friar Ferguson.
Oh, fuck. I forgot about that.
Bully Busick.
So, yeah. So,
would you say, like, this... I mean, it's part of the streak, but do you, like, would you say that this really enhanced the versatility of how much Undertaker can adapt on the fly and just, like, don't just wrestle for paychecks, wrestle and work and earn your respect by taking down two huge men?
No.
In this one?
No, I don't think that. Because I think Undertaker was already at that point. I don't think Undertaker
needed any more.
I mean, I think he was obviously doing it because he was a wrestler. You know, like, I don't think he was. I mean, the dude was already fucking loaded at that point. Hang on. I'm going to plug my headphones in because my AirPods are dying. 1 second. No, I think Undertaker was. He was already one of those guys. He's there to have a good match. He wasn't there to get paid. Dude had already been paid. If he was that guy, he would have retired probably back then, you know?
Like retire at a peak.
Or just retire when you can. Like I'm mm-hmm. going to.
Like, yeah.
Like, I'm going to retire the fucking second I can. I think Undertaker would have been the same way. But, I mean, he had that work ethic and that pride in what he did. And he had that that respect for his legacy. You know? So, no, I definitely don't think he would have retired after that fucking match.
All right. Yeah, good thing he did.
I think he had a lot left to go. And actually, to tell you the truth, I think his if you want to, like, say, split his career in half, and that match is the midpoint, his career after that was way fucking better.
Yeah, I agree.
You know?
I would agree with that.
Yeah, he had a lot of way better years, but...
More world... He had a few... I don't think he won the WWE title anymore, but he won... World heavyweight title on multiple occasions.
Yep.
And he didn't even need
after
to.
That's, yeah.
He didn't even need that.
He's never been a guy that needed that. Maybe his first one, just to solidify him, is okay. He can go in the main event. He's a viable guy at the top of the card. Mm-hmm. Maybe he needed the first one, but everything after that was just gravy. He didn't need a title on him.
Right. Yeah. I mean, you take a guy who had a 30-year career on top, and you look at, like, how many, like, if you were to, like, add up the days. Out of the days that he was world champion combined, it might be a year.
Maybe. Yeah. You know? Maybe.
Maybe.
Easily.
Maybe. You know, like, it was very short, but it didn't matter. He didn't need to be champion.
Right.
You know, like, that he didn't beat Batista because he shouldn't have beat Batista. Or I'm sorry, he did beat Batista. He also beat Edge, but he didn't beat who am I thinking of? Sorry. He didn't beat Shawn in the Hell in a Cell because he didn't need to beat
right.
Shawn. You know, things that he didn't beat Brett at SummerSlam before that because he didn't need to beat Brett. He beat Batista because it was, like, time to throw the guy a bone.
Yeah. And it was WrestleMania.
You know,
and at that point, he wasn't losing at WrestleMania. Same for Edge.
No. So I have one more match on my list. And the reason I picked this is because it was the last match as the American Badass. It was him at Survivor Series 2003 against Vince.
I would agree with that one. That's the important one to point out. Yeah,
right. So I kind of just looked at like the history of the character, and I was like, well, this is obviously an important one. I didn't know if it was gonna be good or not. I was just like, well, whatever, I feel like we need to talk about it because of what it is. Dude, this match fucking ruled. he
was in control.
Oh yeah. My god, dude. Vince, you would have thought Vince was like, Vince came out there like it was a goddamn crash test. Like, he was like, I mean, he was out there like a real doll. Like, Undertaker could fucking do whatever the fuck he wanted to him, dude.
I guess, where was Chow when you needed him to yell, you're gonna kill him?
Right. They did a video package beforehand, and, like, it wasn't really clear why Vince hated him. And I'm like, I don't know that it could ever make sense, because why would Vince McMahon, the owner of the company, hate one of the top stars in the company? But, like, that's another conversation for another day, because why did he hate Stone Cold? Blah, blah, blah,
and HBK.
But yeah, and HBK and whoever Hogan, the fuck. Yeah. You know, like, I hate the guy who fucking gives me ratings and makes me money. Like, it never, ever made sense. But it was great, you know? But Vince was, like, praying to, like, the higher power, because that was, like, kind of, that was a couple years after the higher power thing where Vince had that, like, teddy bear little fire. But, dude, like, 10 seconds into the match, Vince is bleeding. And I don't mean, by bleeding, I mean he looks like he'd been stabbed in his face. Like, his entire face is, like, covered in red, dude. Like, never mind the Crimson Mask. He was, like, you know what I mean? Like, he looked like he'd been covered in fucking, like, you remember when Undertaker, was it, who covered the dude in blood? Was that Undertaker covered Kane in blood? Or Stone Cold got covered in blood.
Didn't Gangrel's Brood cover somebody in blood?
Maybe it was whoever the fuck it was. That's what Vince McMahon looked like. He looked like he'd been covered.
It was like Kerry.
Like, you're like,
oh, like, here's,
dude,
a vat of blood. Dive in and come back out.
I'm like, yeah. I'm like, okay, this is the death of Vince McMahon. Like, I wonder who's going to control the company after he's dead, which will be later tonight. It was crazy. And, like, the Jim Ross was talking about, like, apparently Vince had threatened to have Undertaker's wife raped.
Jesus.
I didn't remember that, and I was like, yeah, that sounds like WWE in 2000.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
That's not far from Katie Vick, so, I mean, that context of Vince being that crazy is not far.
Right.
Yeah.
And Vince got no offense, and it was just all Undertaker. Undertaker was just, and most of it was just punching his face.
Yeah.
He took him outside the ring at one point. He grabbed a monitor. He punched him in the face with the monitor. Vince didn't get his hand up at all. It was just like a monitor right to him. And then he found a shovel and he fucking whacked him over the head with the shovel. And, like, same thing. Vince didn't protect himself. Like, Vince was like, yeah, just hit me in the head with the shovel. The shovel's fucking dented. And I was like, I'm watching. I'm like, dude, like, what? This fucking guy, he's just like, yeah, hit me in the face with a heavy fucking shovel. Like, and I'm sure my brain will be fine. Like, I don't know, man. Maybe his brain's not fine, dude. Because I'm watching and I'm like, dude, I feel like I'm seeing these fucking shovel shots every Monday and Friday now.
Maybe they did take a toll, because here we are in 2020. Programming isn't great.
That's what I'm saying. Yeah, like, Vince seems to have lost his mind. Maybe he didn't lose his mind. I think Undertaker fucking broke his mind.
He punched it out with a monitor and a shovel.
Right. Yeah. His mind went right out of the back of his fucking head. All over the Nutter Center. Wherever the fuck this show was. Or that fucking arena in Buffalo. What's that? Whatever that thing's called. The Tessa Arena. Well, you know what I'm talking about? The arena in Buffalo where I said Tessa seemed to have named it?
Is it the Hershey Arena?
But yeah, so it's like a Buried Alive match, right? So Undertaker takes him up there to bury him, and he throws Vince in the grave, and then he gets in the big fucking excavator. The excavator explodes, and then Kane suddenly appears and throws him in the grave, and Vince comes out and they bury him. And that was it. That was the end of the American Badass, because that was Survivor Series.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So by the next WrestleMania, he was back
as the dead man.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So one other thing that I had in my notes that I wanted to mention, not a match so much as a highlight, was do you remember the 2002 Royal Rumble, Adam?
Maven.
Right.
Oh, right. Yes.
Yeah.
Oh, yes. That was good.
So that's my favorite American Badass incident, where he was in the 2002 Royal Rumble. He had fucked up both the Hardys, and he actually, like, fucked them up, like, more than he needed to, because all you gotta do is show him over the top rope, but he's, like, powerbombing Matt, just fucking him up. Lita's outside, like, almost crying. They get back in, jump him. Maven's in the ring. He's fighting him, and Maven fucking hits him with a dropkick from behind. He goes over the top rope. He's eliminated. Undertaker's
lands on his feet.
Lands on his feet. And he looks at Maven like, you fucked up now, kid.
Yep.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, my God, dude. He goes and gets Maven, and I don't even know if he tossed him over the top rope.
No,
I think
he never did.
Right?
He never did.
Oh my god, dude, he beat the shit out of him. He takes him out. He's shooting him into the rails. He's punching him in his face. He hit him with a chair. Maven's bleeding in a Royal
Rumble.
In a Royal Rumble, Maven's bleeding.
I think they even got to concessions and it was nonstop.
They did. Yeah. The 2 minutes was up, and here comes Scotty Too Hotty. Undertaker just like walks up the ramp. Scotty Too Hotty's dancing to the ring during this shit.
Gets laid out.
Right? You idiot. Like, yeah, like a murder's happening outside the ring. Scotty Too Hotty's dancing like he's on the fucking grind. Undertaker decks his ass, lays his ass right out, and goes right back to work on Maven. Maven's over there with his fucking eyebrows, like he looks like Bert from Sesame Street. And he's covered in blood. He takes him out of the arena, takes him upstairs into the concession area. He tosses his head into a popcorn machine. Maven's bleeding all over the popcorn. And then Undertaker eats the popcorn. And that was the end of it. And there was like, dude, a bunch of marks were out there around that shit. And I was like, I guarantee motherfuckers took that popcorn home. And like, there are guys that made like the popcorn Christmas thing.
With bloody popcorn.
Out of that. Yeah, they have Maven's blood on their popcorn. Like, they're definitely guys who, I guarantee there are a couple people that ate that popcorn.
Probably.
Yeah. Yeah, that was my favorite American Badass.
I remember. I want to say that feud lasted maybe one or two episodes of SmackDown. Somehow Undertaker won the hardcore title, but he still wanted to beat the hell out of Maven. And then Rock
hated him.
Oh, yeah. Rock interferes. Al Snow helps Maven get the title, and they just book it. And, yeah, Undertaker just, yeah, that you... To everyone that was at that ring, you fucked up. But because he is this new mobile character and just now 10 plus years iconic, he could definitely afford to play that. And man, it was so entertaining.
Oh yeah, dude, it was fucking awesome. I loved it. It was the only thing I ever liked better in a Royal Rumble was when Daniel Puter got his ass kicked, and when I held that offensive sign during the Rumble 98.
Shame on you.
Shame on me. But yeah. No, the pewter thing was way
better.
That
was good.
And we'll definitely get to that would be a good watch along. It'd be like a 5-minute episode.
I want to say like maybe one really final point. That Undertaker has announced that he is that he's done in the ring. Do you think that it was a fitting tribute to both his dead man persona as well as a call out to his American Badass persona in the Boneyard match with AJ? Like, this is my full legacy, and this is how I'm going to go out.
I do, in a way. I do. I love that he did that Unholy Trinity thing where he was American Badass, Undertaker, Mark Calloway. That was awesome. I love that match. I've said on Twitter, I've said on here, I hate the fucking movie matches because to me they're not wrestling. They're movies on a wrestling show. But that match, I was fully engaged. I loved it. It was my second favorite match of this year's WrestleMania after Charlotte and Rhea Ripley. However, I do not think that's a final match befitting of a legend like that. I don't think it's gonna be his last match. I know that he said on that documentary like he's done. He doesn't have anything else to do. I'm sure he thinks that, but I feel like he'll change his mind, or Vince will talk him into changing his mind. I think his last match will, if it's not next WrestleMania, it will be this Survivor Series.
Agree.
Which this Survivor Series will be
to
the
go 30
years.
Right?
Yeah.
So
that would make sense.
So I feel like the 30-year anniversary is just as appropriate as WrestleMania is. So it's one, or I think it's gonna be one or the other. But and I definitely think it will have to do with whether we can have a crowd,
right?
There, right. So like, I don't think Survivor Series is gonna be in an arena full of people. I seriously doubt it. I think WrestleMania next year might be. I fucking hope it is. So if if Survivor Series is not, he's not doing Survivor Series this year at the
Performance Center. No, that's not happening.
No. I don't think he's doing WrestleMania next year at the Performance Center either. And like, I fucking really hope WrestleMania is not at the Performance Center. So if Survivor Series is not in arena this year, I think his last match will be at a WrestleMania, whether it's next year or the year after. But I can't imagine the guy's last match is a movie, you know? It doesn't make sense to me.
I would agree. I would,
yeah.
I mean, it's fitting to see someone go out on top for what they're known for, not for being surrounded by the right technical aspects and equipment. Yeah. But still, I think just as a way of combining both the Dead Man and the American Badass in that way, I think it was just some like a very important call out that happened at this
Well, what's the perfect ending for him?
And it really worked.
What's the perfect ending though? What's the perfect ending for The Undertaker? Like, he had a great match in the Boneyard match at this year's WrestleMania. Anything can go wrong in the ring, as you saw what happened at WrestleMania 30 against Brock. You know, God forbid he does an in-ring thing again with somebody, accidentally gets concussed, and what's supposed to be his last match is fucked up.
Yeah, but he could... Okay, so the in-ring... So the match with Brock... I know he says he doesn't know when the concussion happened. I think it was outside the ring when he kicked Brock.
Yeah.
And Brock tripped him and dropped him on the back of his head. You can leave out those moves. I mean, dude, like, realistically, he could... he doesn't have to take a lot of bumps. If you watch several of his later WrestleMania matches... Like, I mean, even his matches with Triple H at 27 and 28, he took like 3-4 bumps. Or maybe, you know, 10 bumps. He can do a match where he's way, way less likely to get hurt. So, for me, it's more who would it be with? And I don't know, man. I would like it to be with like a newer guy, like maybe like an Adam Cole or, you know who'd be a good one? Keith Lee.
Okay.
Right, like I'm not like the big Keith Lee's not my favorite wrestler or anything, but Keith Lee would be a good one. Damian Priest would be a good one.
Aleister Black. I think that would be a great fantasy matchup of personas.
But see, okay, so we thought the same thing about Bray Wyatt 5 years ago, and that match was good, but it was nothing special. Right, so the character thing doesn't really necessarily make that makes sense. Match. Right, so Aleister Black maybe look. I don't think Vince has any grand plans for Aleister Black, but he might for Damian Priest. So I think it should be a newer guy who beating Undertaker at WrestleMania should be a huge thing for. The same way at 21, I sort of thought Orton might have been.
Yeah.
You know, like I thought that was kind of the one match when the streak started where I was like, this might be the one where he loses. So I think it should be someone like that, someone who would benefit hugely from it. So I think Damian Priest, Keith Lee, Karrion Kross, like an NXT guy. I don't want anyone for the main roster to beat him, I don't think.
Okay. All right. What about his X7 match? Nobody's talked about X7 against Triple H. You want to talk about his two matches from 27 and 28 against Triple H? Those are great. But, dude, X7.
Okay.
Like, that was incredible and remains today one of my favorite Taker matches of all time.
Into the production, into the production area. They fucked each other up there.
You got to this 20 minutes late, but thank you.
Well, I didn't want to talk over the two of you.
Yeah, so that was no, that's true. Yeah, no, that match fucking ruled, dude. And you know how much people love 17. Like, I think like most people, like if you did a poll, what's the best one? 17's probably gonna win. And definitely, that match is a big part of it. Like, yeah, they fought the crowd. They went up on that big, the camera platform. So now I just heard recently, and I forget where, that neither of those guys were figured in.
Yeah, they didn't have anything to do for either of them.
Yeah, like a month or two before, like the company didn't know what they were going to do with them. And they were like, well, let's put the two of us together in a hardcore match or whatever the stipulation was. And then they both were like, fuck it, we're gonna go seal the show. And I wouldn't quite say they did, but they came really fucking
close. If it wasn't the best match on the card, I would say it was the second best match on the card. Like maybe the Hardys and Edge and Christian and the Dudleys outdid Triple H and Undertaker, maybe, but
yeah. But dude, Stone Cold and Rock was fucking great.
Well, it was good, yeah. But I remember the ending more than I remember the match itself.
That's true.
But the whole match with Taker and Triple H was just fantastic. Like Adam said, they were all over the place.
Yeah, Motorhead played fucking Triple H in the ring. They went up on the camber platform. Yeah, that was a great. You know what? That was the best American Badass match.
I think so. That's my opinion.
I've just trying to steal all my notes.
Steal the sledgehammer when Triple H pulled it out. I mean, just shows his ring and resource versatility in that on the biggest stage.
Yeah, oh, yeah, awesome match. Yeah. Yep. That's got to be his most famous match, too. That and the one with Jeff. Yeah. But you're right. That match fucking, that match ruled, dude.
And let's not,
you know what? I'm going to go watch that match when we're done with this.
Let's not forget, too, he had a win over Hogan during his American Badass gimmick.
That was the one where he like busted Hogan open too, right?
Mm-hmm. Hogan had beat Triple H.
That was right after
the undisputed title. Yep.
Yeah, that was like right after 19, right?
Yes, exactly.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Pretty big deal.
I mean, he was no fucking joke, dude.
Yeah. I love the American Badass.
That gimmick. It was good. 4 years, but fantastic.
Yeah. Yeah, it was really cool. Actually, I wouldn't have hated if he came back with that gimmick for, like, say, a year. Mm-hmm. And then finish off with the Dead Man. Like, even to say he, like, came back with that. Say he came back now, right? Like, he was, like, going to have a SummerSlam match with AJ. And if he came back as the American Badass and, let's say, Survivor Series, he has a match with, you know what? Put him in a match with Jeff Hardy. That'd be pretty cool. And then the Rumble put him in a match with, maybe Jeff again, or maybe like
Seth Rollins,
like Sheamus, or Rollins. Yeah, Rollins would be good.
Rollins would be the better call.
And then at WrestleMania, he's back to the Dead Man, and he wrestles Damian Priest or something like that, and loses, and then that's it. That would be a pretty cool way to finish his career off. Like, that'd be like a solid like 30 years plus, however many months, you know. I think it would be better. I just hate the thought of Undertaker finishing his career off, like have a career like that and finish it off in, on a movie set.
Agree. Yeah, I agree with you.
Yeah. Yeah. So, I mean, whatever, dude. It's up to him. Like, obviously, like, I hope he retires happy. But me thinking selfishly for myself, I want him to have one more match at a WrestleMania that I can go to.
Agree.
Yeah. All right. Would love that. All right, well, I think we've said it all.
All about the American Badass Undertaker. Let us know what you think about this particular gimmick. I mean, it's practically inevitable we'll be going over the Dead Man gimmick, but again, just
for sure.
What did you think about this particular twist in his career? Did it entertain you? Did it confuse you? Anger you? Or did you really get scared of Big Evil? I don't know. Just let us know and keep those episode ideas coming. Make sure that you hit us up on Instagram, Twitter, TikTok, wrestling_drunk. And let's see.
Buy the shirt.
It is whatamaneuver.net. It's the only one that we have so far. We have ideas for more shirts, but we can't move on to them until we get more of these bad boys out and about. We think you'll look so sexy in them as well. So,
especially in the onesies.
Make sure you do that.
The ladies love it.
What was it? This episode or last episode? Ladies love drunk wrestlers or something. It was something.
Drunk like wrestling that. Fans.
Ladies love Cool James.
All right. On behalf of the American Badass Scott and the American Badass Eddie, I am the present asshole, Adam.
What?
Adam.
It's late.
It is.
I'm a version of an American Badass, but not as much as Mark Calloway himself. I just want to remind you to Enjoy your buzz. Watch wrestling responsibly. Drink like nobody is watching. Stay 6 feet apart. Wash your hands. Wear a GD mask.
One. Goddamn mask.
Oh, yeah. One, two, three. Dead man.
Dive.
Keep rolling.
Begging for a rain check. Old school soldiers blasting out the hot shit. That rock shit.